When I say that Sujata Day was one of my favorite interviews, I truly mean that. I spoke to her for about 30 minutes in anticipation of Definition Please, her directorial debut, hitting Netflix, and there was something, even from our first email exchanges, you know, something just felt so authentic about her. That same authenticity, I think, is also found in her film, which is on Netflix now, and I highly recommend it. And I think that she just is a wonderful conversation. I think when I was given 30 minutes, at first I was intimidated because, generally speaking, for, you know, film interviews and everything, you get about maybe 5, 10, 15 minutes. But I was very lucky to have gotten a half hour with Sujata. But even that wasn't enough. You know, like, even though I was nervous going in, I could have spoken to her for another hour or two after. So I wanted to have her back, and now she's on my podcast. She's also a Pennsylvania native, so we have a lot to talk about. I hope you guys find our conversation interesting. And on top of that, please watch Definition Please. It's on Netflix now, and I promise you, you won't regret it. Well, Sujata, thank you again for joining me. It's nice to actually meet you over Zoom, albeit. how are you doing today?
I'm good. It's a nice Friday morning.
Yeah. Well, congratulations again on Definition Please. I saw all the rave reviews, and it was popular on Netflix, right? So what is it like now that it's been a few weeks since we last spoke? I think I spoke to you before it released. So now what is it like a couple weeks removed?
It's been really exciting. You know, people are continuing to discover it, which is really awesome. And I believe is the beauty of Netflix, where it just kind of premieres there and then it lives there, and it's really easy for people to find, and it's showing up on their lists. And so they're just clicking on it, even if they've never heard of it before. And so it's been really fun. We're just getting a steady stream of really nice comments about it, which I think it's a little surprising, because, you know, for every project you expect some haters. And for this one, I think it's been really nice, because we've gotten pretty much overall just people being positive about it.
So are you just trying to be modest, or did you go in expecting negative reviews, or were you confident in the film?
Listen, I think as someone who has worked in Hollywood for a while, and I've auditioned and I've been in shows and movies, and you have to let the negative comments just roll off of you and just move on to the next thing. So our team was pretty prepared for any kind of, you know, haters, to be honest. And so I'm not being modest. and I do believe that I made a movie that I didn't think everybody would love it. I thought some people would love it, but I think you make a piece of art and you make it for yourself, and you make it for the authentic voice inside of you that is, you know, wants to come out of there. And if it connects to some people, which I thought it would, I was like, okay, it's definitely going to connect to the Indian American community that I grew up in, which it did. Yeah. But I didn't expect it to reach really past that. So that was a really nice surprise.
And can you remind me how your film traveled to Netflix, how it ended up being distributed by them?
Yeah. So we had a year and a half of virtual film festivals, which was a really great thing that we decided to do. Because I think at the time, this was fall of 2020, I had a couple friends that had films that were holding their films back from the virtual film festival circuit. And I and our team, we just decided to put it out there. And it was the best decision we made, because we got a lot of great press kind of off the bat and reviews, and just continued to do the virtual film festival circuit, Asian American film festivals across North America, Indian American film festivals. We got a couple of accolades and awards, which was really awesome, and kept our spirits high during a pandemic. And then in September of 2021, we had our first COVID-safe in-person premiere at the LA Asian Pacific Film Festival. And by that point, Mindy Kaling had come on board as EP, which was really awesome and helped our cause a lot. And a few weeks later, Ava DuVernay's company, Array, reached out and asked if the movie was still for sale. And I said, yep. And they have a deal with Netflix. So Array picked up the movie and was very instrumental in getting it on Netflix.
And so this next question, it might be a little bit hard for you to answer because your film was on Netflix, but I think streaming, I was talking to somebody who said like, it's now like the home for mid or smaller budget movies, right? Because I think theaters are kind of dominated by, you know, tentpole releases, the James Bonds or Marvel heroes of the world. So for you, what are your thoughts on streaming, I guess? And is Definition Please something you would have rather seen on a big screen, or are you happy with the streaming home?
I think it's true that a lot of, especially now after 2 years of a pandemic, you're really picking and choosing what you're going to see in a movie theater. And that's even me personally. I think the last thing I saw in the theater was the James Bond movie. Mm-hmm. And I am completely happy that we ended up on Netflix, because I believe if you're making a low budget indie film, you know, you expect to go to some film festivals, have some people see it on the big screen at these film festivals, which we didn't have. And then if you're lucky, it gets picked up by a small distributor that will place it in a theater in LA and a theater in New York City. And then once again, a handful of people come to see it at those theaters. And then a week or two later, it's out of those small theaters. And then you're like, okay, well, where did my film go? Where is it going to live? So I think the beauty of streaming, and this is not only Netflix, but we're talking about Amazon, we're talking about Hulu, we're talking about HBO Max. I believe that they are more open to these types of films, you know, small family dramedies that are niche. And so that's exciting that my film is available to millions of viewers if they want to watch it. And that would have been so many more viewers than just the normal indie film life.
And now to get into Definition Please a little bit, could you kind of give a little bit of a synopsis or some sort of teaser for the film?
Yeah, of course. Definition Please is about a former spelling bee champion who is now in her mid-20s, and she has not lived up to her potential. She is still living at home. She's tutoring kids on her block. She's having random hookups. She is doing drugs. And in the eyes of other people, she is a loser.
And it does infuse a little bit of the Indian culture, right? And I remember last time we spoke, you talked about how it wasn't, I don't want to say overbearing, but it's not like you completely based the film in that. Do you see any similarities between your stories and, you mentioned Justin Chan last time we spoke, and Blue Bayou was a film that kind of came to mind, where granted that's about a Korean American like myself in America. So, but I just felt that both of you guys kind of use your cultures, but not in a way that's, you know, it's not hammering it home, I guess.
Yeah, Justin Chan is one of my big inspirations for getting this movie made. He came on board as a consulting producer and was a huge cheerleader in just doing it on your own, getting the money together, going out, getting your team together and shooting it. And for both of us, I think even when I watched Gook in 2017 at Sundance Film Festival, I noticed that what you just mentioned is that his character is Korean American and they're just living in the world as they are. And it's not ignored that he's Korean American, but it's not hammered over your head with it. And so that's what I did very intentionally in Definition Please, where it is not hammered over your head, but it's there. It's a part of who this character is. It's a part of who she surrounds herself with in her world. And I think that's, I love that because I've seen so many projects that where the conflict is based on our culture. And I wanted to move away from that. I'm like, there's a different story to tell. That story has been told already, where, oh, I don't know if I'm Indian enough. I don't know if I'm American enough. And for me, I've seen that story so many times. And as an actor, I've auditioned for that story so many times that I wanted to create a role like the kinds of roles that Justin creates for himself or for other Korean Americans, where we get excited about it, where we've never seen that character on screen before.
And could you talk a little bit more about, I was going to bring that up, the audition process, as you talked about that last time, how there were always these stereotypes that they tried to make you fit into, and you wanted to break the mold of that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the auditions that comes up in my head right away is something that was about a year or two before the pandemic. I was auditioning for a very popular sitcom. I won't name the sitcom, but it was for a big role on this sitcom. And I went in and it was me and four of my friends, because, you know, it's all the Indian American girls in town. And so I went in and did the audition for the producers, which is pretty much the last step to the audition process, getting in front of the producers. And then I was walking out and I made them laugh and I was excited about the work that I had done in the room. And then I get a call. I hadn't even left the building, and I got a call from my agent saying, oh, they loved you. And then she asked, they want to know if you're 100% Indian. And I was like, okay, I'm going to answer this question, but it's weird that I have to answer this question. I was like, I'm 100% Indian. My parents are from Calcutta. I speak fluent Bengali. But at that moment, I knew that I didn't get the job, and I didn't end up getting the job, because in their heads, in these producers' heads, these casting director heads, I didn't look like what an Indian in their mind looks like. And so that was the most recent audition I had in terms of that. But even before that, I had had to do an accent. I had to wear a headscarf or a hijab, even though I'm not Muslim. And a lot of the plot lines were centered around arranged marriage, which was very strange because yes, that is a storyline with our parents' generation, but not with our generation. So even I've mentioned before that I grew up in a very thriving Indian American community and had a lot of Indian American friends. And within our friend group and even beyond, our generation just doesn't experience that pressure. So I was like, oh, why is Western media and these writers harping on this one concept that they have of us? And those are the stereotypes that I've come across in terms of auditioning.
And so is for your next film, which I know you mentioned you're writing and at the moment, do you plan on continuing to tell these kind of Indian stories with, I mean, I know you're going back to Pennsylvania. So are you going to kind of do a similar thing? Because I think it's great that you want to show representation that's truthful.
Yeah, it's going to be similar. It's I will continue to write about Indian American first generation stories. And this next film is way more comedic, along the lines of Adam Sandler, Will Ferrell, Michael Showalter movie. And I'm really excited to get into some absurd comedy with a very talented ensemble of a mixture of friends and new faces.
And so I remember you were talking about your college journey, right? Because I think you were studying, was it engineering?
Oh, yeah, I graduated with an engineering degree.
Which is, so then I forget, how did you then get into Hollywood? That's quite the jump from a school in, was it Ohio?
Yeah, Cleveland. Case okay. Yeah. So I have been putting on my own plays and shows since elementary school, since I was five, just shows in my backyard and being in, I was in Catholic school at the time. So being in, you know, the nativity, Christmas plays and festivals. And then as I got into middle school and high school, I continued to do theater and especially musicals. And I was also turning out to be a budding writer. So the thing about all those things is that I was also really naturally good at math and science. And I never felt like I had to choose in terms of middle school, high school. I did all of it. My parents were very supportive of it all. I, you know, took piano lessons. I took voice lessons. I took dance classes at the temple. My parents were there 6 nights of the week during the musical when it was up and bringing me flowers every night. So I didn't get pressure from them in terms of what I wanted to pursue for my career. I remember I did a 6 week, you might be aware of this actually, the Governor's School program in Pennsylvania. So I did a 6 week stint at the Governor's School of Healthcare at Pitt. And this is the summer after your sophomore year. And after I got home, I was like, so I'm not going to be a doctor. and my parents were like, okay, cool. And then I felt more pressure, I think, from my Indian American friends who were overachievers, and they were going to be doctors and get their MBAs and work on Wall Street and be engineers. And I was like, oh, I guess that's what I should do too. So then I got a scholarship at Case and went to Case and studied engineering. And even there though, I continued to, like, I got short stories published and I still did theater. I still did musicals, went to study abroad in Sydney. And that's where I decided, oh, I'm going to find my way out to Los Angeles after I graduate and start my professional entertainment career.
And so you've been on numerous shows, right? I know you were on Insecure on HBO. And what was the coolest, like, I guess, this, you know, what's the coolest celebrity interaction you had? Or maybe it was when you were younger and first getting into the industry.
I mean, the coolest celebrity interaction actually has to do with Definition Please. And it would have to be LeVar Burton. And I am part of this Blurred Brunch group, where we brunch every Sunday. And even during the pandemic, we did Zoom every Sunday. And these Zooms would turn out to be, you know, 6 to 8 hour Zooms with everyone. So this was before the pandemic. This was about 3 or 4 years ago. And we were sitting at brunch at the restaurant, and Yvette Nicole Brown is part of that brunch. And she saw LeVar Burton walk by. And she's like, oh, I work with him. I'm going to go say hi and bring him in to introduce you to everyone. And then she came in with LeVar and introduced him to all of us. And he sat down and he said, everyone take out your phones. And he had us take his phone number down, like right then and there, which was unbelievable. I mean, we could be spamming him with calls and, you know, asks or whatever, but he didn't think that was going to happen. So that was cool. And then he started to come to brunch. And a few weeks later, I was like, I have this like perfect role for him in Definition Please. Do I just text him? So I was like, yeah, I'll just text him. So I texted him and I said, I have this role for you. He asked to read the scene, read the script. And then he said, yes. And I was like, oh my God. And even the day on set was really fun. He came and it was a really easy green screen day. And after we were done, after we had wrapped, he kind of stood up there on the stage and he asked, so does anyone want to get a picture with me? And then of course everyone did. And that was so generous of his time. And he was very kind. So he is probably my favorite celebrity experience, which now we're friends and we work on projects together.
And with Definition Please being your directorial debut, is this the first time you've had to do, I'm sure you've done, you know, junkets and interviews before that, but this is the first time as a director where you're the captain of the ship having to do that. What's it been like for you? Is it a whirlwind to have to keep doing these interviews?
You know what? It hasn't been a whirlwind because I have been doing this for a year and a half during the film festival run-in. And I was on a lot of panels at these film festivals. And that really got me prepared for the past, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks of the Netflix marketing push. And I'm so grateful and thankful that we had that film festival run where I could essentially practice what I was going to say and discuss the themes of the movie. And a lot of the time, the moderators and the interviewers gave me new ideas about the film, which was really exciting. And even the press and the reviews. So I don't feel overwhelmed because once again, I'm just like really happy that we did the virtual film festival run. And we also picked up a lot of fans along the way in these regions where when we did do festivals, we would block the film regionally. So if it was playing in Naples, Florida, only those residents could see it. So it was really exciting to kind of go to these different places in America and play there and pick up fans.
Yeah. And so are you in LA right now or are you back in Pennsylvania?
I am in LA right now. Yeah.
Okay. So I imagine that's where you spend most of your time, right?
Yeah. But when I go back home, I take extended vacations. So I'm usually there for a month or a month and a half.
Okay. So do you miss it, you know, when you're in LA or do you kind of prefer, like, could you compare a little bit of the lifestyles and what it's like being in, because Pennsylvania is a lot different.
I think just personally for me, when I'm back home in my parents' house in Pennsylvania, I get a little lazy. So I'm, you know, my mom's cooking me delicious Indian food and I'm watching Bengali soap operas with my parents and I'm reading a lot of books, which is actually, I love to do. And it's my way of de-stressing, but I don't get a ton of work done. So I like being back in LA just to get in my work zone.
Okay. And so right now, are you going to stay in LA until you finish writing your next film or what's the plan?
Well, the next film is done writing. Oh. So we are in the process of raising money and pulling on producers and financiers and hopefully, fingers crossed, shooting in the fall of this year.
Okay. Is there any place where people, is there any sort of Kickstarter campaign or are you more so just going to the different producers?
Andrew, Kickstarter is so much work. It is so much work. And I saw Justin go through that with Goop. And I would rather just gamble it on a phone call with a rich person who maybe wants to put in a huge chunk of money than do the immense, I mean, props to people who do Kickstarter campaigns, because that is a full-time job.
Yeah. And what did you learn from your first film now that you're, well, finished writing, but you're prepping to shoot it. So what was something you learned on the first film that's prepping you now for your second?
I was super over-prepared for Definition Please, and that worked in my favor. And that was really, really great. And I want to continue to be over-prepared. I want to continue to gather the best crew that I can to make sure everything runs smoothly. And if we run into any problems, they're easily solved. And I'm just excited. We had a really great, smooth process of prepping and shooting Definition Please, and even with the post-production. So I just strive to do that all again with a little more money.
Yeah. And so actually you said you were overprepared. Could you kind of take me through quickly? I know I'm running out of time with you, but what a day in the life of directing, you know, Definition Please was like.
Yeah. So we, like I said, in terms of being overprepared, I had written the script. As soon as we settled on the shooting script, I could put my writer hat away. And then I put my producing and director hat on. If we get to, let's say, day one of shooting, making sure I get a good night's sleep, I have to at least get 8 hours of sleep, which I did every night, even during the shoot, and making sure I had all my lines memorized because I knew that the other actors were coming with a lot of fire and they were going to be hella prepared. So I wanted to be prepared for them. And having my shot list ready, I had discussed earlier on with my DP and cinematographer, Brooks Ludwig, what we wanted the tone and the feel of the scenes to be. We had already decided on lenses and the style was going to be handheld photography. So we watched a lot of handheld films to prepare. And so once we got to set, all the preparation had already been done. So we could just really concentrate on the performances in the moment and the technical stuff that Brooks handled really well.
And do you still plan on acting? I mean, obviously you acted in Definition Please, and I imagine, are you going to act in your second film?
I am. Yes. Okay. I continue to act in most, if not all, of my movies.
And are you still acting in other stuff alongside? Okay. So you like, do you like both? Which do you prefer though, acting or directing?
I prefer acting. I feel like I began writing and directing in order to create the roles I wanted to play.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm pretty much out of time with you, so I'm just going to let you. Do you have any place you want to plug, anywhere people can find you?
Sure. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at Sujata Day, and we also have Definition Please across Facebook, Twitter, which is Definition Please, and then on Instagram, sorry.
You're all good.
So Definition Please is on Instagram and Facebook, and then DEFN Please on Twitter. So please follow the movie to find out all the latest news.
Yeah, well, thank you again. Congratulations on the film. It's always tricky to review a film and also interview the director, but with this, in the case of Definition Please, it really wasn't. It was a great film, and I appreciate you sitting down and talking again.
Thanks so much, Andrew. This was really fun.